Jones.
And Mike. Real radio for real people who are real enough to realize they really still have a few things to figure out. Jones is a hockey-playing, city-living, vegan bachelor who practices transcendental meditation when he's not biking to shows and Cub games. Mike's a beer-swilling married father of four from suburbia. His motorcycling, marathoning, and martial arts are pretty much on the shelf while he limos children all over town to their activities for the next decade. Sound familiar? It's, you know, shit dudes say. About family, women, philosophy, politics, history, people, money, pop culture, kids, fighting, business, life. Join the conversation. 312-957-7210. Hashtag Jones and Mike. 24/7 worldwide at jonesandmike.com. This is Jones and Mike. Jones and Mike. Jones, I'm glad you're feeling better. I'm glad you're not on your deathbed anymore, although I must confess, I get a little charge out of you being sick. I like it.
Why? Why would you get a charge out of me being sick?
Because you're like a health and fitness snob, and you make the rest of the world feel like crap for living poorly. So when the vegan, who every day is doing the steps at Swallow Cliff or running along the lakefront or, you know, wrestling with other men. You're doing all your fitness things and then you get sick. I love it.
Get some context.
You're trying to what?
You could try to put that in like a better context, me just wrestling other men.
Well, right. All of the crazy fitness things that you do, not eating bacon, you know, all of the things that we do that us normal people, mortals do that you don't do, and then you get sick. I love it. I feel good about myself. You make me feel better when you're sick, especially when you're like in your bed laid up for days sick.
It's brutal. It is brutal. And if that makes you feel good, me getting sick.
Yeah.
The last few days, like I missed 2 days of work. I went in on the third day and got sent home. And I was getting to the point where I was laying in bed where I was like, and this has been going on for weeks, where I was like contemplating like, okay, is this what it's like when you're just like, if you have cancer and you're just powerless in bed and you're waiting to get better. Like, and then I would think like, don't think like that. Don't even allow that thought to come in.
Yeah.
But I was just having these like bizarre thoughts, and I may be one of those guys. Like, I can play a sport, get knocked down, and pop right back up again, and show that I'm fine.
Again. Here you are again, talking about how fit you are.
But maybe I'm one of those. You know, men get a rap that they're tough and everything's fine, but then once they get sick, they go to like a level of like childhood or like a toddler just like whining about everything, and I might be that guy. But I was laying in bed and I was like contemplating what it would be like to know if these were your final days and you weren't strong enough. Like, that's where my mindset goes when I get sick. Like, that's how far off the table I fall. And it really weirded me out that I got to that level while I was sick, because and maybe I'm making myself sick. Because there's been this trend within me for the last few like weeks where like I've been contemplating death like crazy.
Death, like this is because of the sickness or even before the sickness? No. I think that was the sickness coming on. You started to feel like crap. You didn't realize it yet.
You hit the nail on the head better than I did. I think that's what I was trying to say. Like, have I been worrying so much about death lately that I made myself sick?
Well, that's not what I was saying. I was saying that, like, you know, sometimes you're sick and you don't realize it yet, and then you look back and you're like, oh, I was starting to feel like crap a few days before that or whatever. And I'm just saying that my premise was that you started to feel sick, your brain knew you were getting sick, and that's why it was flashing the death stuff in front of you. But you're saying that you actually brought it on by being worried about death.
That could be it as well. Because I did, as I look back when I was sick, I was like, I was kind of getting run down the last few days, whatever. But in the days and really week or two prior to that, I caught myself watching almost obsessively YouTube videos on plane crashes.
Really?
People getting swept away at sea. And I would even see these things get kind of served up to me and be like, why is this getting served up to me? Well, I guess I'll watch it. And then I would just watch it. And after a while, I'd be like, dude, you've been sitting watching people get swept away out to sea for like 25 minutes. Then I would go about my day. And then the next day there would be something like plane crashes caught on tape.
Yeah. Well, that's
always
a fun one.
I'm like someone who can't watch. I don't like super aggressive action movies. I don't like horror movies. Like, I'm not like a blood and guts gore guy. Sports wise, I don't mind blood and guts, but outside of that, not really.
Right.
And here I was watching fighter jets, passenger planes, just boom, boom, boom. And then all of a sudden this illness kicks up, and then I'm contemplating my own death. And while I was under the weather, then I came across an article. There's like an article in the BBC about how people between 35 and 50.
Yeah.
This is prime time of contemplating your own mortality and your own death. And I'm thinking, okay, is this the natural part of me doing that? Or am I doing it to a point where now I'm like making myself sick?
So wait a second. The Beeb says that's like industry jargon, by the way. You call it the Beeb, right?
I'll give you that. The Beeb, the BBC.
That's right. So the Beeb says that.
That can mean many things, by the way, but we'll just go with British Broadcasting Company.
Right on. So the Beeb says that that between 35 and 50, you're inordinately preoccupied with notions or visions or of death and coming to grips with your own mortality. That's the premise. How come it stops at 50? You would think 50 on, you're really tuned in because your friends are dying and you're going to more, you know, you're eulogizing people. It's got to be way more front of mind.
You would think, and they say, though, in your 60s is when it really begins to drop off and you like don't worry about it. So I kind of wonder if facing that reality, knowing that in the coming years you're going to be facing it soon, it seems big. This is going to sound morbid as hell, but maybe when it starts happening, it's not that big a deal. I don't know. Or you're able to process it. Like when people around you start dropping off, you're like, oh, this is the life cycle. I'm in it. Fine. But when you have to anticipate it, it's worse. But then the other thing that they pointed out that I thought was totally weird was they studied like 200 people. There was a study where they studied like 200 people over the course of 25 years. And they found that the more that people contemplated death, the more that they were tolerant of racists.
What?
They were less supportive of LGBT plus. I don't know. We need to make a decision. Yeah. Are we going LGBTQ or are we an LGBT plus?
Oh, there's
show?
A plus now? I didn't know there was a plus.
There's a debate. I've seen both now that they just say plus because I think the plus crowd's like, look, enough with the letters. Almost sympathetic towards the LGBT letter plight where I'm kind of almost, I think I'm a plus guy. Where I'm like, yeah, let's just go plus because it's like, Jesus, how many letters are we going to squeeze onto here? So
yeah, you already sound like an old codger. You're not tolerant at all of these people.
But you know, isn't that funny though? Like I would have thought the opposite. Like if you're contemplating death, wouldn't you go along the crowds, along the line of, people want to do what they want to do. Okay,
I don't care. Right? Yeah, okay, yeah, live and let live.
Exactly.
I only have a little time left. I'm not going to waste it hating and being intolerant.
No, no. Another thing is the people who contemplate death regularly at this period, they take a harsher attitude. And I thought this was like totally out of left field. A harsher attitude toward prostitutes.
Really? You would think that you'd really be into prostitutes at that age.
Yeah, but I don't know. Maybe it's that like, you know, the sin, like you're contemplating your own mortality. And I don't know why if you're contemplating your own mortality.
That makes sense, actually. Yeah, it makes sense, actually. You get
the
more religious.
The prostitution thing, it does. But I don't know why you would become more. Like, if you knew you were going to die soon, wouldn't you chance it better? If you were thinking that there is a great hereafter, that your odds are better to have a better hereafter if you were less racist or not at all racist as opposed to more racist. Wouldn't you think?
Hmm.
I could get why you would go, okay, God probably wants me to hate prostitutes, so I'll do that. And depending upon your age, it's kind of a catch game on the LGBTQ plus.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But the racist thing, wouldn't you think?
Yeah, I don't get it.
Now, I know I'm not supposed to be racist.
But.
So I won't.
It's one of the few things that's giving me pleasure now in my 80s.
Right, but now, don't you weigh that? Maybe you get away with that in your 60s. But when you're in your 80s, you're like, okay, it could be any day now. So this is no longer a vice. Racism is no longer a vice I can give into. Wouldn't you think you would go that route?
Oh, I like how you put it in the term of it being a vice. It's right up there with smoking and drinking. And
but you even framed it that way. Like, yeah. I've been doing it for so long. It feels so good.
Yeah.
And to be clear, we're not talking about us. We're talking about that.
No, of course not. No.
Speculative person that we're both creating here and now.
Although we will talk a little bit more about race later on in the show. So between 35 and 50, I can get on board with this grappling with mortality. Certainly we talk about it all the time, how we're, you know, concerned about, you know, we want to be 80, 90, 100. I always tell my kids I want to be 110. And so to get there, we know we have to have the right lifestyle choices and set the groundwork, especially you, which is why it's so great when you get sick.
I know. Still don't understand why you get like a little kick or a joke. Actually, I kind of do. But I don't think I'm obnoxious and in fact, over the last few years, I don't think I've been incredibly healthy. I think I really need to kind of get back on the boil. I used to be, 10 years ago, I used to be ridiculous.
Back on the boil. What does that mean?
It's like an old, like, get back on the ball kind of a thing.
Really? All right. Okay. Yeah.
Maybe it's a more old-timey phrase. I could have just dropped that.
No, that's a good one. I get back on the boil. It sounds like you have a speech
impediment.
Like, I think
it's the water's boiling. It's going again. Okay.
All right. So now you're starting to think that maybe you brought it on. Now I'm wondering if I'm manifesting illness in my own life. But at any rate, so I never spend 2 or 3 days in bed like you just did. So that's why when it happens to you, I love it. So I think you just need some protein, bro. You're not getting enough protein from the fig leaves or whatever you eat.
That's not, protein's not an issue. Everybody always brings that up to me. It's not an issue. Do you know how much protein you get in quinoa, in beans? You get like a ton of protein.
I know is I have never been laid up in bed. I've never had someone look at me and go, "You look horrible. You better go home."
I would argue with you that you've had people look at you and go, "You look horrible." I don't know that anybody sent you home.
Yeah, they don't. Sending me home isn't going to fix what ails me.
But no, and that's the thing. The other thing about it sounds, some people might hear that and be like, "Oh my God, that'd be glorious. Just right now, this part of my life, just to chill out and lay in bed for like 3 days." Like you said, you haven't done it. I don't recommend it. Like laying in bed for the better part of 3 days beats your body up like crazy. Like now my neck is sore, my back, like it's hard work to lay down.
No, I know. Ask Brian Wilson. He'll tell you. How did that prick do it for like a year or something?
It's insane. Like your body just gets beat up just holding in that. You try to shift around, but it's essentially the same position. Oh, it's the worst.
Even Jesus only made 3 days. Brian Wilson somehow did it for a year. That's too long. Too damn long.
Ugh, it's crazy.
So you're laying there and you're like, okay, because I've had that feeling too. Like, oh my God, what is it like when you're on chemo or something? Like I know I just have like a virus or like a cold or something or a flu and I'm being such a puss about it. How does someone with breast cancer do this?
Well, that's what I was contemplating while I was sitting there. That's exactly what I was doing while I was laying there. Like I told you, I was sitting there thinking like, is this, if I ever got sick, if I ever got cancer, is this what it feels like? Like this desperate mind state. And then here's the other thing too that got me. I think this may be the genesis of what got me on the death thinking.
Yeah.
Now, okay, fine. Apparently we're at that age now where we're susceptible to it. But you saw that picture from like 2 weeks ago. It was a military picture that was from 2013. Yeah. An army photographer snapped a photo, mm-hmm. just you know, perfect timing, relative, perfect being the relative word of when an explosion went off and killed her and like two other soldiers.
Yeah. They were like dropping the mortars into the launcher and it like blew up in the like canister or something, whatever the military terms are.
I wouldn't have even apologized right there. It sounded like that's what it was. It sounded good.
Oh, okay.
But it was that moment where you saw those pictures, right? Where the one guy's just on the phone and the flash is going off. And then there's the other picture of the other guy flying through the air, but he's still on the phone.
Yeah, right. Yeah.
And I just stared at those pictures for like ever, contemplating like, okay, had the spirit left the body? Like at what point in that scenario does the spirit leave the body? Like, how would you even process that? Like, and obviously no one can have experience of this. You know, it's just total speculation, but like, boom, something happens. And now you're out of this dimension and this body you were in, you were in another one.
Right. Right.
And it just tripped me out looking at that and thinking, as I'm looking at that picture, it's the only picture I can think of that I would look at and go, okay, has the spirit left the body yet?
Yeah, did you ever see there was like a motorcycle crash and like it must have been some sort of an optical, you know, illusion. But people claim that it's like the motorcyclist's spirit leaving his body as like the EMTs are working on him. Did you ever see that photo?
Yeah, I think I have. I'm familiar with what you're saying. I feel like I have seen it, though I can't just recall it right now in my mind's eye.
Yeah, it seems like total poppycock, but yeah, I dig what you're saying there. And I wonder if it like gives some solace oddly to the family that they get to see their, I don't know. I know that's strange. Why would you want to see your kid blown up or whatever? But it seems like, you know, people who experience tragedy and trauma like that, they want to know where the body's buried. They need closure. They want to know exactly what happened.
Right. I think that there could be, like, I think the only way I could relate to it in my own life was I was with my mom when she passed.
Hmm.
And like, I remember like they have that, there's this term, it's called the death rattle. Like when everything just kind of leaves the body and there's this like, and then that's the final breath. So I was there like with her, like holding her hand. And like, all of a sudden I got this sense, like I could, something fell off. Like all of a sudden it was almost like I had dog hearing or something. And I was like, okay, wait a minute. Something's missing here. Something's absent. And like I could hear the machines better or whatever. And I thought for a split second, like, okay, my mom's not breathing. And then like I could tell that she wasn't breathing.
Oh, wow.
And I was like, oh, wow. She passed. And I was just thinking myself, like, oh, come on, one more breath. Like, it wasn't like she was in hospice. She was not coming back. I wasn't begging for that.
No, you could have fooled me.
And then
I guess I didn't really know what hospice meant when I visited your mom. Well, yeah, you're not. No. Well, what a beautiful view. Not going to have this view much longer, Mrs. Jones.
No.
Because you're
going to
be back home. You're going to be back home.
No, to be fair, what you said. Oh, wow. Miss Jones, this is a great view. You should enjoy this while you've got it.
Oh, come on. And then I clarified, because you're going to be back at home.
I know, which was even, she didn't even, I think all of that just sailed past. Because you're going to be home in your house and not going to be able to see the skyline.
Oh, Mike, you always were such an idiot. Yeah. I can't believe my son was friends with you.
I know. But
there and were you kind of like, wow, I just experienced death. Was there any part of you that,
like, I put my head down to see if I could hear heart or anything or breath. Uh-huh. And then all of a sudden there was the death rattle of, and I had that sense of like, oh, wow. Like I felt like I was there when the spirit left the body, but it was weird to just look at a two-dimensional picture and just be tripped out looking at it.
It was
almost like I was on drugs or something, like, okay, is the spirit still in the body or is it not in the body? Because you're seeing these two bodies, one flying through the air and one just standing there, but both on the phone, totally normal.
Yeah.
So I think that maybe got me on my death thinking.
Yeah, and it was like training too on top of it, right? They were just training in this video, the two soldiers.
So.
And it's like that to me, even that sucks. It's like, it's not even like you were actually like killing bad guys.
Right, right.
You died, although you obviously to get to kill bad guys, you have to learn how to do it.
Yeah.
But it's just, there's something about when people die in training that really gets me.
Oh, I know.
The ultimate sacrifice in South Carolina training.
Yeah.
But at any rate.
No. They were in Afghanistan.
Oh, they were there. Okay.
That picture
that's
was
right.
in Afghanistan.
Oh, that's right. And they actually, like, the people they were training, yeah, I was like, okay, yeah. Got it. Okay, so you're grappling with this. Is there any part of you, and I mean this with all due respect and love, is there any part of you that is kind of like, you know, I'm a bachelor, I'm a childless bachelor. If I ever do get sick, who's going to take care of me? Like, do
yes,
you think that?
I do think of that, sure.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Like, it gravely ill? Yeah. Like, it does suck. Like, when you're like sick for 2-3 days and you're by yourself and you kind of are only taking care of yourself. And like, I didn't call my sister. I'm like, let me wipe my butt. You know, I'm not going to call her to come take care of me.
Would she do that? Do you think?
No.
Oh,
no.
Awesome.
I would not want that. But I didn't even bother calling her. Like, I talked to her days later. She's like, you were sick. I didn't even know.
Yeah. I'll give you credit for that. I didn't know you were sick either until after the fact. So,
yeah,
good job.
But it is one of those things, like, when you do, it is, I will admit, yeah, once I got to the point where I was being a total wimp, like, oh, what is this like if you're dying? Then I was like, oh, my God, would this be it, like, just laying in a bed by myself? That's why I want to, maybe, as your kids get older, maybe I'll have a sit down with Dom.
Yeah.
And I'll just be like, look, you know. I was pretty, in your youth, I was pretty cool with the gifts. So you got to swing by every 2 weeks and make sure I'm not dead. Even if it's only for 2-3 minutes.
Right.
You just got to poke your head in.
That's right. You owe your bachelor uncle some wellness checks.
Yeah. You remember all those video games? You remember all those DVDs?
Yeah.
Swing by, poke the head in. Uncle Brian, you're looking all right.
Yeah, do a wellness check on you.
Yeah.
You're good for that. You're good for that. There's a rumor out on the streets, Jones, that you may be meeting your maker faster than you should because you're fighting with cabbies. Is this correct?
And that could be, yes. My life has taken an aggressive turn.
Yeah, you can't be fighting with these people from Afghanistan, man. Like, when they come over here and they start driving us around, you can't fight with them.
This was an Americano.
I want to know more about this next, Jones and Mike.
And triggered snowflakes. Two dudes say the shit you say, think and feel. And now we're ready to blow this shit up. Announcing Jones and Mike version 2.0. Coming to a phone, car, or computer near you. Live video and audio. Anywhere you are. Anywhere you like it. Anytime you need it. Words that sear through your mind like tiny little missiles of brutal truth that make you go... Or freeing men from the malaise of middle age. Giving women the straight dope on what their dudes think. It's the sh** dudes say that women want to hear. Go to www.patreon.com/Jones and Mike. P-A-T-R-E-O-N. Patreon.com/Jones and Mike. Support the show. Join our community. Get rewards. And help save Spaceship Earth from the hordes of fake news bullshit artists. Dudes Say with Jones and Mike launches when we reach our first goal of just $100 a month. Get the show for not much dough. Dude Say with Jones and Mike.
Rated M for mature audiences.
Coming soon.
Jones and Mike. So you're fighting with cabbies, Jones. How does this happen? Tell me exactly how you find yourself in this predicament, because you just told me recently that, like, you just admitted that you almost got into a fight on Wacker Drive with somebody who was being an aggressive aggro a-hole.
Right.
And I thought, like, what are you doing? You can't be fighting. You're a grown-ass man. Like, this Brazilian jiu-jitsu is going to your head.
No, it's really not that. It's really not that. The last few weeks I've been having issues with cabbies.
With divvies, while
really
you're divvying?
Like,
Like while you're divvying, while you're walking, or while you're in a cab?
It can be both. Divvying, walking, like even taking a cab. When you compare cabs now, cabbies to Uber, like Uber, they show up, the car's clean, they're nice. They seem like they're happy to see you.
Yeah.
You're happy to see them. It's a nice little conversation. If you want to talk, if you don't, they're quiet. Now, so many times I get in there, they have like that satellite radio. What kind of music do you want to hear? Never get that in a cab. The other day I was walking down Madison Avenue. And a cab, it had been raining, and a cab clearly and intentionally just drove into a puddle of water to splash me. And smartly, another cabbie behind him pulled up and, like, put down the window and was like, sorry about that. And it was, like, smart move, because he knows when cabbies who had the monopoly in this town, you know, in terms of getting cross town in this area for years, decades, they could treat anyone however they wanted. Now with Uber, the game's different. So when a cabbie treats you like crap, you remember, like, well, the hell with cabbies. Like, they're all jagoffs.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So he knew, like, hey, good cabbie here. Sorry about that. And I was like, okay, smart cabbie. But still, that highlights the problem. Cabbies are a-holes. So.
And he, like, so there was a puddle, and he literally, like, swerved over into it to splash
and
you.
And got it. And it wasn't that he swerved over because he was making a turn. I was in the middle of the block. There was no reason for him to suddenly get close to the curb and then go back out again.
It wasn't like he thought you had hailed him.
No, I wasn't looking for a cab at all. I was just walking down the street. It was just one of those things. And cabbies like to cut people off. They have dominated the city of Chicago for so long, and for any major American city for so long. They still feel the roads are their birthright to do whatever they want. Cut people off, almost dare to hit them. I mean, my sister got kicked out of a cab once because he was driving erratically. And she was like, just take it easy, take it easy. And he pulled over. He's like, get out, no. Like, they're insane.
Really? Like in Seinfeld?
Yeah. No, they're crazed. So the other day as I was coming home, now this is different from when I...
Yeah.
There have been two road rage incidents that I've been involved in. Now, one of them didn't involve a cabbie. It involved another, like, suburban nut.
Okay.
Who made the wrong turn and tried to quickly get himself out of it and, like, drove through a crowd of people to get back on and go to. So he's heading in the proper direction, going down Wacker.
Right.
He was going the wrong way down Dearborn. And the guy, he almost hit a guy, and the guy kind of tapped his glass, like, what the hell are you doing? Wake up.
Yeah, which I think is a mistake. I think that's provocative.
Yeah, but I understand it. I totally understand it. Like, there's no reason that this guy should just be, oh, I got to get out of here. I got to get out of here. I'm going to drive through people. Yeah, when they have, like, they were, clearly there's a group of people walking through. They have the right of way. You've effed up. Just stay there and be the a-hole for 22 more seconds because you did screw up.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And then you can go forward.
Right.
So the guy taps his glass.
Right.
As he's driving by. And then the guy goes, gets the car past the curb, and then he pulls over and, like, jams on the brakes like he's going to get out. And I'm going by on my divvy, and I'm like, no, the driver was wrong.
Mary Poppins
so
bike.
I pull over on my divvy, like, the guy's going to get out of the car, and then he sees me.
Yeah.
Now he knows there's at least two people that are going to be like, whoa, 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 buddy.
So I love, then he, and with all due respect, and again, you are a lethal man now. You sink that rear naked choke in, and it's that's it. There's no, 99.9% of people are not getting out of that.
I am a destroyer of men, yes.
So you're not to be trifled with. On the other hand, you know, most people don't, they're not going to look at you and know that. So, you know, I love how the guy's willing to get out and fight another man, but then because you walk up, and again, you know, with all due respect, you're 145 pounds,
right?
And you're 5'7". Right. And I love how the guy's like, well, now that's a little too much for me to take on here.
Yeah, but you have to, he's at least seeing, okay, he has to at least process, okay, now there's two people, is a third. If that's why I did it.
Right.
That's why I did. Because now if two people react, now he has to think, well, three or four react. And it's one of those things like – and I think, honestly, my response has nothing to do with me training Brazilian jiu-jitsu. My response has me – is from living in the city of Chicago, seeing incidents like this where someone's out of control. They act like the aggressor. No one does anything. And everyone's going, is someone going to step in? Why did they just let that guy beat that man?
Right, right.
But if more people just go, no, buddy.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah,
it's not like I pulled out a knife and was like, you know, one of the outsiders ready to go.
Yeah.
But I was at least acknowledging like, no, buddy, you could have killed someone. Drive along.
Yeah.
And I think more people need to do that.
Okay, so you weren't stepping in because you wanted to throw down with this guy. You were being the peacemaker, actually. You knew that if you and others stood up, that would defuse the situation. And then no one would have to fight at all. So you were doing the noble thing.
I was going with the Point Break mentality of peace through superior firepower. Like, God, if you're a white man and you're going to get out of the car and you know you're at least going to have to scuffle with two people, and then you know if two people get involved, a third is more likely to get brave, a fourth is more likely to get brave, probably the math is not going to be in your favor.
Right. And if nothing else, it probably just indicated to him, now, okay, there's definitely going to be a witness to this, and it's just going to go, it's going to go south. So he got back in his car and he left, and thank God.
Yes. So disaster averted.
Right.
Now, Friday, I had missed 2 days of work. I went into the office, and by 11 o'clock, everyone was like, go home.
Yeah. Yeah.
You're going to get the whole office sick. Just go.
Yeah. Nasty.
So I was like, all right, I'll go home. I hopped on my divvy. I'm pedaling home. And I'm clearly in my bike lane pedaling up Dearborn. And, this guy, this cabbie, just comes over and he starts to veer towards my lane. And then he's getting closer to me. So then I just out loud just give one of these. I don't swear at him. I don't say anything directly at him. I just do one of these like, whoa, 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 whoa. Like, get his attention. I put my arm out, like, get back. And he keeps coming over. I continue to pedal. And then I'm like, hey. And then he like looks at me and I put my arm out and kind of give him one of these like, hey, you know, like the backhand.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, I don't give him a finger, but like kind of a wake up.
Yeah, yeah.
So this guy goes nuts. He had the window down and he had to be deranged. He just starts MFing me a blue streak. So I smartly start MFing him back.
Oh, brilliant. I like when you make the right choice like that. Good job.
So here we are. He's in a car next to me. And now we're coming up. There's like that, I think it's not Grand. Maybe it's Illinois. But there's this fire department just right by Dearborn. And I'm pedaling by there. So there's all these horns and whistles and you know, as I'm going right by it. And we're arguing as he's riding alongside me on the bike lane. And I'm pedaling in the bike lane. And we're swearing at each other.
Oh, my God.
And he's like, man, you're lucky I don't kick your ass. And I might have referred to him as a pussy, I will admit. I did not make some of the best choices from this point forward.
So you challenged him to come. Like, was he sounds like he was an older African-American man. Is that accurate?
I think he was. So, but we're yelling back and forth. And it didn't get racial. I know probably people, their minds may go that way. Oh. We were just genuinely in a moment of when two dogs walk across each other and for no reason, it's just like, bow, 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 bow.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
We were in that mode.
And so no, he did not call you a cracker.
No, there was no racialness at all. We just were letting the other one know. Like, I'm not backing down. Now, foolishly, I was on a bike not backing down. He was in a car not backing down.
No,
but, like, I was just, he was MFing me, I'm MFing him. He's threatening me. I'm like, yeah, try it. You know, but as I'm doing this, the best part of this is, as I'm doing this, like, I see this, like, blur in the back seat. And I kind of just quickly look back as I'm pedaling. I'm like, he's got a fare in the car. So here's this person who just minutes ago was just like, rock and roll McDonald's.
Yeah, yeah.
And now all of a sudden there's like this brawl taking place. And I can only imagine that this person in the back seat is like, sir, sir, don't, please don't pull over. He shouldn't have called you a pussy. No, but sir.
Yeah.
Like just this chaotic.
Oh, I know. I'd be calling 911. Get me out of this cab. You know, yeah. What if this breaks into gunfire and it's because of this nut driving me?
Right. So this guy's nuts. We're threatening each other. He's screaming. I'm right by the fire department on Dearborn. So there's like horns and bells and everything going on. Then I hear people. I heard a guy from another car shouting out like, "Why is he angry at you?" And I was like, it was like the most chaotic scene ever.
Jeez. So,
as the lights changing, like we're still going, and I just go through as the lights changing. And the guy, like, spins, like, he goes and takes this, like, hard turn and then, like, pulls over to the curb and, like, jams on the brakes because he's going to hop out and chase after me.
Really?
Yeah.
With a fare in his cab.
In the cab.
But, sir, I have a meeting to go to. What are you doing?
Yeah, no, sir, I need those apple pies. I'm hypoglycemic.
Jesus.
You know. Yeah,
you're making living in the city sound like a real cakewalk. It sounds like a lovely existence.
It has its moments of glory and it has its moments of grief. I think that's the I don't know that anyone would disagree with what I've just said.
People
lives in the city.
Yeah. Are people more like angry all of a sudden? If I feel like there are people raging behind me on the Stevenson, you know, even though I'm, you know, of course, I spend 2 hours now. It's construction season, summer season, driving season. It's great. It's 2 hour commute each way now. So I'm bumping up to 4 hours a day, 20 hours a week in the car. Pretty sweet to go 38 miles or whatever.
Right.
But it feels like even, you know, we're going 10 miles an hour. It's pretty congested traffic. And I have people raging, screaming at me because I'm not tight enough. I'm not close enough to the car in front of me. It's like, what are you people maniacs? What's wrong? Do you feel like people are like on edge or something? Is Mercury in retrograde? What the hell's going on?
It's, you know what it is. It's just people being compact. I think there are advantages to city life, but I think, you know, in our DNA, we were like hunters and gatherers and like prairie people. And now all of a sudden there's tremendous advantages to living in the city. One of the disadvantages, though, is people are right on top of one another. So if one, you know, if one little tiny firecracker explodes, it's likely to ignite the whole pack. So while I don't feel like every time I walk out the door, there's going to be a threat or I have to look for, you know, I'm looking for a fight. My head's certainly more on a swivel in the city than if I'm walking around in the suburbs. It's one of those things where you really have to recognize. Okay. Do you remember last year on Memorial Day, there was that huge 100 person or 200 person brawl that happened?
Oh, at like North Avenue Beach.
Right. So I had been at North Avenue Beach about 30 minutes beforehand. And I came back to my apartment and I saw my sister out in the courtyard and I said, oh my God, I just got back from North Avenue Beach and there is something going on there. I could tell there's a fight brewing. Like I could feel it.
Like the electricity crackling in the air.
People were just like ready to tear each other's heads off. Erratic behavior. People were just, they would be like, there was bumper to bumper traffic that was stopped at Lakeshore Drive. And people would just get out of their car in the left lane and walk across the other two lanes and hop the railing just to go over to the beach and leave just one person in the car, but not knowing that one other lane of traffic's going.
Yeah, yeah.
And then they would just start crossing the street and people are jamming on the brakes and honking the horns. Then people who are just crossing like out of nowhere are like yelling at the people in the cars. And then the people at the cars would start accelerating and forcing their way through the crowd like – that was happening all right in front of me. So,
and you were like, I have to get out of here. You felt like I got to leave. I feel like something's going to go down. And then 20 minutes later it did.
Yes. And you could see it. So that's the kind of thing that happens.
And they were like, suburban, like white kids, if I recall correctly. It wasn't like gangbangers from Englewood.
No, it was just people. It was just people.
Yeah,
you know, I mean, it was like I remember one incident in particular where these girls were just trying to run across the street and girls were trying to run across Lakeshore Drive, should never have gotten out of the car. And then I saw these other kids who were like in this supercharged Jeep Cherokee who it's bumper to bumper. They got the little bit of a lane and the guy just floored it. Should never have done that. Almost hit these girls. They're screaming at him. He's screaming at them. He tries to drive through them. So this is people with money. They're coming down to party in the city. They're driving around in $60,000 trucks. It's just, it's the nature of being stacked on top of one
yeah,
another.
Yeah, I like that, man. And I think that we're not wired for urban dwelling. I like that premise, actually.
I think that could be part of it.
There's no reason,
like, especially being like, honestly, and I'm not just trying to paint it like I was in the right. Like, I escalated the situation when I shouldn't have.
Yeah, dude. You know, the P word? Come on. You can't call it.
You should have heard what he called me. but at the same point, like, he should be thinking to himself, like, oh my God, dude, I almost went into a bike lane. I'm a professional driver. I'm supposed to be aware of this.
I'm a professional driver. That's awesome.
You have to pay for a medallion. Like, he has a medallion to drive.
Right, but that's owned by the company. How in the hell are they still selling medallions? How has Uber not absolutely crushed cabbies out of existence? Like, those medallions are like, aren't they like 500 grand or something?
I thought they were 2,500. They might be 500.
2,500? No, 2,500.
2,500 to get like a medallion as a driver.
No, I thought they were like crazy amount of money. Like it takes a decade to make the dough back.
I don't know. Yeah, maybe I'm thinking, oh, you pay off. I don't know. How much is a medallion for a cab?
Because maybe this is the right time to get into the cab business.
Oh, I think you might be right. Medallions. Now this could maybe be as New York City, but it says $1 million. Now maybe I have a misunderstanding here. No. Is a medallion to own a cab company or to drive a cab?
No, I thought a medallion was for a cab.
So to drive a cab in the city, that's why they're so irate.
Yeah, because they can't make any dough anymore.
Well, I know that they can't make dough, but they have to try to pay down $1 million over the course of their cab career for a medallion?
Over the course of their being a professional driver, as you just called it.
Yes.
Yeah, so right on, dude.
That's why they're crazy.
So, yeah, it says right here, dude. In fact, aldermen are proposing a taxi medallion buyback. Alderman Ray Lopez, 15th Ward, says that the value of taxi medallions has plummeted because of the emergence of the rideshare industry. So it's only fair that the city buy them back from cab owners. This guy, that's not going to work. The city's broke. Every taxi operator has had to purchase a medallion from the city in order to operate. There are a fixed number of medallions, so the value peaked at around 300 grand, and they were often bought and sold. But the value of medallions has since dropped to around 40 grand, and there is hardly any market for them at all anymore. So Lopez wants the broke-ass city to be paying all these people back. So it would be paid for with a $2.5 million startup pot of money from city taxpayers. Yeah, I'm sure the city taxpayers are going to love that. So there you have it.
That's what I don't know where I got the $2,500 number from. Well, maybe they're paying $2,500 a month.
Let's be honest. You don't know anything about taxi cabs, drivers, what they face. I think you owe that man an apology.
Oh, he will not get one.
He
came into my lane. It was clearly, I was in the lane. I was in my bike lane.
Stay in your lane, Jones.
I was in my lane. He ventured into my lane.
So, you know what I like to do when people are raging at me, you know, in traffic or whatever? I like to laugh at them. And that might not be the right decision for the right, for the wrong type of a macho nut. That might be a bad call that just, you know, agitate and infuriate them to the point of madness. But I do feel better about myself when I don't stoop to their level and scream at them. And instead, I just laugh and I wave, actually.
See, that seems more
emasculating than.
Yes.
Huh.
Yeah, because at least if you get extremely angry, you're recognizing the attempt at a threat, and you're trying to answer it.
Right.
But if someone's attempting to threaten you, and then you just laugh at them.
Right. And then every now and then, dude, I will. So, like in, I think it's called lane management when you're riding a motorcycle.
Okay.
You have to obviously you divide the lanes into like threes, and so you want to be in the leftmost part. I like to ride there usually so that they could see me out of their side mirror. I never stay right behind someone. So, and there are times I'm over on the right hand side of the lane. But so I do the same thing with my SUV. When somebody's being an a-hole, I drift over to the right side of the lane, for example, and like as if I'm going to sideswipe them. You know, it's kind of an aggro thing, but I laugh. First I laugh, and then I wave. And then if I really feel like it, I'll drift over like I'm going to hit them. Because I have a, 2004 Honda Pilot. The thing's a total POS. They can see that I have nothing to lose.
You know what? It's funny. I kind of winced a little bit when you first proposed that, but I do remember, like, anytime I've been driving a car I don't really care about, I would kind of use it as a battering ram. Like, go ahead.
Yeah.
I know you're going to back down. You just bought that BMW M3. I know you're going to back down.
Yeah, man. Yeah. Like, kind of like, yeah, you know what? We're both going to have a crappy few weeks while we get our cars fixed, and I'll probably end up, just getting something new anyway. So let's do this.
You're really
that pissed off? Let's do this.
I kind of sadly, I think I have veered that way too.
But again, at first I laugh, and then I'll put my arms like out, like I'm just relaxed, like I'm just so relaxed right now. I'm not agitated at all. You're angry. That's your problem. That's on you. I'm not. So maybe you try that from now on. Would you promise me you'll stop getting into altercations, bro? And if you do get into an altercation, tell me, what would be the first thing you would do? Certainly you'd try to close distance and space and get tight on them, yes?
Yes, absolutely.
Most people, they want to back off and they're going to start throwing their wicked jab, their wicked hardcore jab. Not you.
Right.
You want to get in tight, get your face on them.
Yes. Absolutely.
Because they can't punch down, they can't get much leverage on you. And then you're going to try to take their back, though, first thing, right?
I would like, that's ideally what I would like to try to do. If I could, cinch in around their hips, maybe swing my leg behind theirs, trip them, roll over the top. Maybe I could possibly roll into full mount. That would be the dream scenario.
And if you get them in full mount, what are you doing then? I mean, is it a grounded pound, or are you going to try to submit...
It depends on what the situation would call for. I think ideally, I would like to just prefer to control the person, because it's harder to just keep someone mounted than people would think.
Even someone who is not trained in BJJ, they're writhing. It's hard.
Yeah, it's not super easy. So I probably would like to go for a submission or just, moreover, a position of control.
And there's, since there's no tapping out, you're probably just going to end up breaking their arm. That'll freak them out, and then you have a chance to... See, in karate, they are like...
Yes, no, the your first, chosen form of...
That's right. My martial art, they say, just run away. Like, there's no... Don't fight ever.
Well, no. Of course they say that. All of my instructors have said, if you can point and say, hey, what's that over there, and run away, that's jiu-jitsu. Totally do that. But this is obviously your training for the moment where it's inevitable. You're not going to get away.
Yeah, you're like you're cornered in a alley. There's no escape.
Yeah.
You've got to fight your way out.
Or someone's chasing you and you just know they're going to close on you. They're going to get you.
Yeah, no, I would do the big brother chasing me thing where I'm writhing around. I'm trying to make them miss. I'm running. I'm doing zigzags. When I'm doing that, dude, there's no catching me.
That's what you say now.
I'm like a rabbit. You can't catch me. Ask my brother. He'll tell you.
Yeah, but come on. I think most people who would build up enough anger to try to chase you down on the streets, they're going to be a little bit younger and quicker than your brother.
Oh, well, that absolutely is true. All right. So just promise me that, now that you're off your deathbed, and again, dude, you're a transcendental meditating dude, man. I can't believe that you're not so chill that, your heart rate never gets above 50, no matter the situation, no matter if some cabbie's calling you a pussy. I can't believe this happens.
Well, no, I mean, it can happen if someone is going to be directly in your space. Yeah. I mean, I am, you've seen me. I'm very chill most times, but if someone is going to hit you with their car, that's going to raise your level of reaction. If you think someone is going to unjustly jump out of a car
right.
and try to beat someone up, I think regardless of whether you're a meditator or not, you should stand up. If you go, wait a minute, that guy does not deserve a beating, I'm going to stand up. I don't think that goes against meditation.
Well, I do, and I expect more out of you, frankly. So please stop this path you're on. You know what you need to do? You need to just start, watching a little PBS, Jones.
Ah.
The new show, American Epic, it's getting real. And thank you for bringing this to my attention, because I want to check it out. And I think it's going to get people talking on a whole new level about music and about race. Yes, you agree?
I think so.
We'll talk more about this next, Jones of Mine.
In a world of beaten down middle-aged men, frizzy panty waists, and triggered snowflakes, two dudes say the shit you say, think, and feel. And now, we're ready to blow this shit up. Announcing Jones and Mike version 2.0. Coming to a phone, car, or computer near you. Live video and audio. Anywhere you are. Any way you like it. Anytime you need it. Words that sear through your mind like tiny little missiles of brutal truth that make you go, or freeing men from the malaise of middle age, giving women the straight dope on what their dudes think. It's the sh** dudes say that women want to hear. Go to www.patreon.com/Jones and Mike. P-A-T-R-E-O-N. Patreon.com/Jones and Mike. Support the show. Join our community. Get rewards. And help save Spaceship Earth from the hordes of fake news bullshit artists. Dudes Say with Jones and Mike launches when we reach our first goal of just $100 a month. Get the show for not much dough. Dudes Say with Jones and Mike.
Rated M for mature audiences.
Coming soon.
Jones and Mike. Jones, you're going to be watching the new show on PBS, American Epic.
I'm going to check it out for sure.
It's a three-part Robert Redford narrated documentary exploring the history of early 1900s music. It sounds boring as the day is long.
It does, but I've noticed that they have a couple personalities in it that I was open to checking out.
Right on. Like Jack White.
Yeah. Jack White. Nas is going to be on it. So those things got me curious. I did want to check that out.
Right. So this is a little bit from the trailer that's on. I'm getting this from allhiphop.com, but this is from PBS's American Epic. This is Nas talking here about his part in the show here.
Man, it sounds like something today. And these guys are talking about women carrying guns, protecting their honor, chasing after some woman who's done them dirty. This is not high society, black folks. This is the down under, you know, street, wild black folk that they're singing about.
Right.
And it's the same as today. It's the same as rap music today.
That's right. So this is, Nas says that we should be watching this show because it's not the high society black folk that he's going to be, highlighting. This is the down and dirty black folk. And that strikes a chord with you.
It did. It did. And it was funny, like, I checked out the trailer because it had, I like Nas, I like Jack White. I kind of was curious to see what they were going to do with this, like what would their involvement be. And I'm always a little bit sketch about the rap rock world coming together. It does come together at times and works very well.
The Judgment Night soundtrack, legendary.
Yeah, I mean, there are times where it does really work. I think most times it doesn't work and it's very awkward. And even, you know, even if you played that clip a little bit longer and listened to Jack White and Nas, it sounds, it's just a cacophony of crap. It's just sounds awful. It's awkward. But they seem like they're overly pleased with themselves while they're playing. So there's a part of me where I'm like, good for them. They're proud of themselves and they think they've hit it out of the park, but it sounds terrible. But the thing that stuck with me was, you know, that part where Nas says, yeah, this isn't about high society black folk.
Right.
That this is about street, wild, you know, just like it is now in hip hop, you know, in present day. And I was like, okay, if Jack White had said that same thing, he would be eviscerated. If you heard Jack White go on microphone and say, oh, this is about, you know, this is about wild black folk, this isn't about, you know, high society black folk, this would be everywhere. And Jack White would be made to apologize. He'd have to apologize about it. PBS would probably pull the program. But it raises a very, and I'm not taking Nas to task for what he said, but it raises a very interesting question in my mind. Okay. Based on what you just said, a musician yourself, and I believe his father was a jazz musician. Obviously, you seem to have some affinity for American music, the history of American music.
Right on.
So are there two black societies, the high society and then the wild, street, out of control society? And if there is, can everybody comment on that?
No, of course not. No.
So why does that exist then? Why does that difference exist? And what is the value in even talking about it or trying to get other races to talk about it if everyone couldn't speak about it on the same level?
Yeah, I think that black people could talk about, you know, the differences in their own community.
Sure.
I've been shocked to hear about white, light-skinned blacks and dark-skinned blacks. They don't get along. The light-skinned blacks look down on the dark-skinned blacks. And the dark-skinned blacks look down on the light-skinned blacks for being, you know, too white. So, and even if you speak with you know, quote-unquote proper diction, some black people will look down on black people who speak too white. So,
well, it was the skin tone issue that always tripped me out. I got to like my mid-20s. I had never even realized that was a thing. And I was working at a radio station with a couple other black people, and they had mentioned that. And I overheard that they were talking about like someone being darker and he was lighter. And I overheard them like, wait a minute, you guys know who's darker and who's lighter than each other? And they looked at me like I was crazy, like, yeah, of course. And like in unison, they were all like, Harold is darker than me, but he's lighter than you. But Rebecca is darker than both of us. But Cheryl is lighter than all of us. And they were like lockstep. They knew the shade of every other black person around them and where they slotted in. I was like 20, I don't know, between 25 and 28, somewhere in there. And I was like, what? You guys know? And he's like, yeah, we talk about it all the time.
Yeah, that's
just, I remember
shocking.
The first time I heard that, I was like so shocked to know that that was a thing.
Well, right. It's totally, man. I have a Huffington Post article up here right here where this woman is talking about how, you know, she, well, the title of it is The Secret Life of a Light-Skinned African-American Girl. And in here, she quote, the quote is, hate has been so embedded in us, blacks hate other blacks for being black. And it's like, that blows my mind. Whites, we really don't, we don't have that. We don't make that calculation, but we do the, you know, the we acknowledge our separations and so forth. For example, a guy at work, he showed me the engagement ring he's going to be giving his old lady in a few weeks. And that was highly, easily the gayest thing that happened to me all week. I felt so weird. I was like, let's see the ring and stuff.
Right, right.
Like, what the hell am I doing? But I had to. And he's like, oh, my engagement ring arrived. And he was holding it.
Right.
He's holding the little box, right? So he opens this thing up.
Yeah, you can't not see it. You have to be...
Right,
yeah.
But it's like two dudes doing that. It was bizarre. But at any rate, he opens this thing up. And this thing is like, it's like 7 carats, I guess.
Right.
So I'm like, hey, bro, like, I understand your 2 month salary is probably a lot different than my 2 month salary, but you really did do 2 month salary, bro. Like, unbelievable. And he comes from like old money, North Shore old money. She's from Winnetka, old shore, you know, North Shore old money. And I'm like, I can't even like wrap my mind around giving that to someone. I'm like, I'd be afraid somebody, you might want to give her a concealed carry to go along with that thing, bro. Like somebody's going to lop off her finger in a restaurant to get at that thing, right? And so he's like, oh, I just wanted something that was really so unbelievable that she would never want to add on to it. And I'm like, add on? What's that? And he's like, oh yeah, well, people, you know, they certainly when they get more money in life, then they'll start putting on more and more. And I'm like, what? I'm like, I don't know, man. I don't understand the ways of you North Shore people, bro. I'm from the South Side, where and you get your engagement ring and, you know, in my case, it's $187, but it's what it represents. It's not about how great it is. But,
right.
But I guess you people on the North Shore, man, like you end up with a $100,000 ring someday. So I kind of started to do like a classish thing with him.
Yeah. And that's like a North South Side thing, but.
Right.
But
and I felt kind of dumb for doing that, but I couldn't help it. I had to remind him I'm more normal than you. And don't forget that. And meanwhile, he's probably thinking like, yo, you're such a loudish rube. You don't even understand how it works.
Right. Okay. But then kind of dovetailing back to what we were originally talking about, then what would be the more normal way of like your effort, you know, in terms of communicating your purpose, I should say, was to communicate like, hey, I'm more salt of the earth, more quote unquote, as you say, normal. So when Nas is talking on PBS about this isn't high society blacks, this is gritty, you know, wild street, pull a knife on you, you know, like take your girl kind of black society. What would be the normal society?
Right.
You know what I mean? Like, it just seems funny that to make that differentiation.
I got to think he was kind of doing the same thing I was doing, where he was saying, like, look, the realest black people are these people, the gritty people. Those are the normal people. I'm trying to say, oh, well, 99% of the world, you know, we just give a ring and that's the end of it. You're in the 1% of the world. Where you give a $50,000 ring, and eventually someday it's going to be $100,000. But like you've got so many millions, what's the diff?
So okay, well let's.
So I think
now,
he was doing a class thing more than than a racial thing.
Okay, but it's a racial thing that if you or I went to acknowledge that class difference, and using his words,
yeah,
we'd be destroyed for it.
No question.
So. Then it kind of begs the question is, what is the value of the conversation then? If only one, what is the value of it? Or even what's the purpose of it? Like what is the point of this PBS show even? If you are going to put out like traditional like American music, you're going to go with old black blues performers, you're going to speak of their cultural experience, but only one side can speak of it. Then what is the value in anyone else participating in the conversation? If all they're going to do is receive the message and then just go, okay, well, it's in here, but it can never leave here because if I ever try to talk about it in any kind of way, I'm going to get destroyed. Then it's almost like there's no value in talking about what is the value or the purpose of talking about, let's say, the poor black experience. Is there, I guess I'm trying to get to a baseline of it. Is there a value to it?
Yeah, I just think
if we can't participate in the conversation, then what's the point in having the conversation?
No, that's kind of the new world that we live in now, where you can't really talk about anything because you're going to offend someone. And the worst thing that can ever happen is that you offend someone. So you just better, it's better to just not even speak at all.
Right.
Just laugh. Just laugh and wave, but don't really get involved.
Right. And again, like I'm curious to see the show. I like Nas. If anything, I regret last year at Riot Fest when we waited during a 30-minute delay to see Morrissey when we could have been seeing Nas. We even debated leaving Morrissey to go see Nas. And we, at the end of the show, admitted we made a mistake.
Well, because we couldn't understand that, you know, Stephen Patrick Morrissey came all the way to America just to punish us, to make us wait for 45 minutes to insist that they didn't sell any like meat products during his show. It's a carnival. It's a carnival festival.
Right.
And they had to stop selling meat. We just couldn't believe that he literally was going to play no hits after being late for 45 minutes, making us wait for 45 minutes, standing there. Oh, and then he was showing videos behind on the stage of a projection of like people, like animals being killed and stuff. And like
right,
concentration
right.
camps and stuff. So it was like visually, you know, sad. The music were, you know, no hits. And they were like dirges. We just couldn't believe that he was literally going to do just that.
Yeah.
We had to see it through.
In short bursts, though, he still got the pipes. I'll give him that.
Yeah, sure. Great. Who wants to hear these dirges, though? So that right. was all that was. We were just like, we got to see this through. We
yeah.
already invested so much here. But yeah, what a disappointment.
Right, right.
We should have seen Nas.
I know.
And who knows? He may have been throwing down some real, you know, knowledge about the black community. Maybe we would have learned.
Street wild.
That's right. Right. Not your
high
upper,
society.
Not your highfalutin blacks.
Right, right.
The real blacks.
And that's the other thing too. Like it was really even the way that he frames it, it seems like high society blacks. Now, high society in general is kind of put down as like a bad thing. Like, oh, he's high society.
Right. I did it myself. I couldn't believe I was doing it.
Yeah. So it's kind of interesting. I mean, that does seem to be like a universal thing, but it is interesting. I wouldn't ever. So even, okay, you were in the situation that you were in where you were putting down high society. But in that, did you describe yourself as wild and, you know, street?
That's right. No, I didn't.
It's funny to go like it's funny even the delineation that he makes. Like, okay, there's high society, and even though deep down we all aspire to have a lot of the trappings of high society, no one wants to be high society. But then the next step down, at least in Nas's eyes, as he presents it on this PBS special, is like street, have a blade in your hand, fight for your life. And it was like, is there a middle ground?
Yeah, right. Yeah. Where you understand the value of hard work. You're humble.
Right.
You remember your roots and the roots of your people. And you're not selling out to the man.
And the fact that we're talking about this, a lot of people would hear it and be like, you guys shouldn't even be talking about this. You guys are not in a position where you should be talking about this.
Oh, absolutely. No, and that's why this show is different. That's why this show is different, Jones.
That's why it's the best.
Unafraid, unfiltered, yes. Uncensored. Not afraid to suck and sound stupid. That's this show, Jones. This is America Unepic. They kicked Ronnie Woo Woo out of Wrigley Field, Jones. Is that what I'm to understand? They kicked Ronnie Woo Woo out of Wrigley Field.
You are understanding correctly.
And you are outraged by this, but many Cub fans...
I'm not happy at all.
Yeah, many Cub fans are applauding this. I can't believe he's loathed. I thought he was loved. This is turning my worldview upside down. Ronnie Woo Woo next. John's a Mike.
In a world of beaten down middle-aged men, frizzy panty waists, and triggered snowflakes, two dudes say the shit you say, think, and feel. And now, we're ready to blow this shit up. Announcing Jones and Mike version 2.0. Coming to a phone, car, or computer near you. Live video and audio. Anywhere you are. Any way you like it. Anytime you need it. Words that sear through your mind like tiny little missiles of brutal truth that make you go... Or freeing men from the malaise of middle age. Giving women the straight dope on what their dudes think. It's the sh** dudes say that women want to hear. Go to www.patreon.com/Jones and Mike. P-A-T-R-E-O-N. Patreon.com/Jones and Mike. Support the show. Join our community. Get rewards. And help save Spaceship Earth from the hordes of fake news bullshit artists. Dudes Say with Jones and Mike launches when we reach our first goal of just $100 a month. Get the show for not much dough. Dudes Say with Jones and Mike.
Rated M for mature audiences.
Coming soon.
It's Jones and Mike Jones on April 19th. Ronnie Woo Woo Wickers, the formerly homeless drunken man who has new teeth, had his teeth replaced by a fan a few years ago, who wanders around outside of Wrigley Field and inside Wrigley Field wearing a full-on Cubs uniform and shouting out Cubs players' names and then saying woo-woo after their names. Sammy, woo! Sosa, woo! That sort of thing. That lunatic has been part of the fabric of the Cubs for 35 years, since the early 80s, something like that.
Right.
On April 19th, he was watching a game from the bleachers. According to him, a security guard came up to him in the seventh inning, asked for his ticket, and he said, "Oh, my ticket is it's a virtual ticket, digital ticket, is on my friend's phone." And his friend, this guy Scott Miller, was not able to pull up either his ticket or Ronnie's ticket on the phone, so the guard kicked them both out, of the game. And Ronnie is so pissed, he has demanded a sit-down with Tom Ricketts, the owner of the Cubs, and his quote here in the Tribune is, "I'll take it all the way to the Supreme Court if I have to." He wants to fight the Cubs over being kicked out of Wrigley Field. And it's shocking me that many Cubs fans are applauding this, but you are not.
No, I can't understand this for the life of me. Like, my first game that I ever attended, it was October 3rd, 1982. And at the end of the game, I remember we were walking around center field. I was with my dad, and we're right by Murphy's bleachers. And Ronnie Woo Woo was walking out. This time he was like a bum. Like, he was had problems with alcohol. He had just this stretched white t-shirt with stains on it, missing his teeth. And he was doing the whole Bill Woo Buckner Woo. And he was just crazy. And I remember my father pulled me and like kind of pulled me into him and put his like arm across my chest and pointed at him and was like, "You see, son, that's what happens when you get stuck on the drink."
Hey, were you and like, "Yeah, Dad, I understand now."
I remember that. And I had seen him like years later, and yet gradually cleaned up his act. He got a Cubs uniform. It got dirty. Then they cleaned it. Then someone put teeth in his face, and it got better. Now, I'm not going to – I get it.
And there's a photo of you actually posing with him, holding a sign, like for your 30th birthday. Like, my first game was
– No, 30th anniversary of going to the Cubs game. 30, so in 2012, October 3rd
– Okay.
My sister, and it was, again, the last game of the year. Yeah. It was like the perfect 30th anniversary. I went to Wrigley with my sister, and Ronnie was there. And this time he was all cleaned up. So I got a picture with him holding the sign of, like, this is my 30th anniversary at the Cubs game.
Got it. Yeah.
So now, like, I know you haven't been to Wrigley since they won the series. When was the last time you were there?
2 years ago. I didn't even go to a game last year.
Okay. Sad. So it's a different world.
It was the last time. It was when you were kind enough to take us into the third row or whatever, and we were so close. I didn't want to say anything bad about Joey Votto in the on deck circle because I was afraid he'd come into the stand and punch me in the face.
We were right there. Yes.
So, I was whispering to the guy next to me, "Joey Votto's a prick, isn't he?" I was afraid.
Right. So the last 2 years, the ballpark the area around it has changed so much. It's Disneyland now.
Really?
And the Ricketts are making bank off anyone that walks into that neighborhood.
Oh, that's nice. Those guys deserve it. Those guys have been on hard times.
Well, whatever. They bought the team. They did what they wanted with
that's
it.
Right.
They won a World Series. It's great. But they're not in need of money. Ronnie, as much as fans want to try to cook this thing up like he's a nuisance, he's an institution down there. He lives one L stop north of me. I've been on the L going to the game. People are taking pictures with him. At the game, people are taking pictures with him. Walking around the ballpark, people are taking pictures.
And he's not even like that bastard bear who, after you take a picture, he taps his little lunchbox for a tip.
Billy Cub?
Yeah.
Billy Cub is no more, but he just
after the fight in the bar when he punched the guy for taking off his hat,
his helmet, yeah, his little Cub head, that didn't go over well.
That was the end of him.
But like Ronnie Woo Woo is harmless, and his time, he's like in his mid 70s. He doesn't even do the woo thing, and I'm seeing all these people online, and against my better judgment, I just couldn't back off. I saw a guy comment on a Yahoo article, and I saw a guy comment on an article. I'm getting downvoted now, by the way, and people are angry at Ronnie Woo Woo. They're like upvoting him. Like, I don't get this at all.
You got to delete that, bro, before it's going to ruin your Reddit karma, by the way. So delete it.
I'm starting to wonder if it's even worth it. Like, really? Like, really? I have to. So in order to get Reddit karma, to express myself, I have to act like other people.
That's right. That's right.
You're supposed to go online and be your genuine self.
Right.
Like, what? I don't get it. Meanwhile, these people who are going on Reddit and calling him a crackhead, not a crackhead, and they're going and claiming...
That's just racist, is what that
he
is.
He runs games because he just screams through them.
No way.
I haven't been to a game in about 10, 15 years. He doesn't shout woo anymore. He doesn't even have the power to do it. He's like, we saw him last year, the night... I don't think it was the night they won the series, but the night they won the pennant, he can barely get around. He had like a scooter.
Yeah.
And he had like a handler with
He's got a walker some days.
Yes. Yes.
They call him Ronnie Woo Woo Walkers sometimes.
Right. Yes. So it's, but people are cooking up this image now just to be bitter and angry, and they can hide behind the anonymity of being online. And all the while I'm looking at it and I'm going, like, Chicago Cubs, is it not a lot? Wouldn't it be? Isn't it a lot harder to kick him out as opposed to just let him be? Everybody's used to him being there.
Well,
what's
right.
the big deal? Just he's the last. You've washed away the whole ballpark is Disneyland now.
Right.
You've washed away almost every ounce of grit and Chicago personality. He's the last remaining trace, and he's not going to be around in a few years.
Right, and after him, all we'll be left with is Eddie Vedder and John Cusack and Bill Murray. That's it.
Yeah, so let it go. Just let it go. It's not costing you anything.
Yeah, so he claims...
scream out in the middle of the games. He's not a crackhead. And then there was this guy who's getting into me on this firefight on Reddit. And it's like, he's banned from all these bars in Wrigley. I'm like, no, he's not. He actually sat down at my table at last year at Casey Moran's.
Yeah. So
what, like, stop calling him a crackhead. He's not. Stop saying he's banned from bars. I just saw him in a bar.
Yeah,
stop
no.
Stop saying he's screaming out in the middle of the games. He's 75 years old. He can barely speak loud enough when you speak to him one-on-one.
Yeah, Ronnie's claiming that there's a vendetta by Cubs management to harass him. He claims that, like, they require him to produce his ticket, like, more than other people in the stands have to. And I'm surprised by that, because that would be... I'm surprised that they're not squashing that, because... And if that's true, I think that's a bad idea, because it's making it seem like Wrigley Field is unprotected. This guy is wearing a Cubs uniform. He's like 6'3 or something, right? He's big, isn't he?
Yeah, he's a tall guy. I'd say he's over six foot or taller. Yeah.
And he makes himself known and visible and seen. He's very identifiable. So if he's sneaking in to the stadium, that makes it seem like the place is not secure. So, you know, if he can get in, can't somebody with a bomb get in? So I wouldn't be pointing out that he's sneaking in if I were them.
Right. Yeah, it's 75 years of age.
Yeah, this guy, he's scaling fences and somehow right. usurping our defenses.
Right. And I get it. On one end, it's ridiculous. He's saying, I need to talk to Tom Ricketts. But we know he's crazy. It's like hanging out with like the walking man in downtown Chicago and like taking every comment that he utters seriously. We just know there are these Chicago personalities. You don't take him, like, we shouldn't have even taken Mike Royko word for word, you know, seriously in the heart. So why take Ronnie Woo Woo? Just let him be.
So this is
let
where
him go to the ballpark.
This is where Tom Ricketts can really look like a hero. He needs to do the sit down for a photo op, and he needs to say, you know what? I'm sorry this happened to you. You get a lifetime pass into Wrigley Field. We love you, and we want you to be our guest.
Yes,
and there should be a seat that he, like, the Ronnie Woo Woo seat out in the bleachers.
Right. Yes. Yes. In fact, it should be something where, like, he could almost be in, like, center field, but, like, he could be in a throne that, like, gets elevated.
Yeah. Yeah.
And then, like, they can just wave Ronnie, and then he can wave back.
Yes.
That's
yes.
what they should be doing.
That's right. And there's a couple of bikini chicks with palm fronds waving.
Why not? Why not?
This is where Ricketts can salvage victory from the jaws of defeat. Not that he's, you know, he's exactly sucking at things these days.
No, no, no. You're right. But, like, why? It's one of those things where it's like, it's such a small detail. Like, if I'm Tom Ricketts, I'm picking up the phone to some, I don't know if it's Crane Kenny, I don't know if it's his brother Todd or whoever it is, and just, yeah, the woo-woo thing, handle it.
Yeah,
and just
yeah.
Slam the phone down. Like, you've got to be kidding me. Let Ronnie show up. It's only going to last a few more years, people. He's not screaming. He's not doing crack. And you know good and goddamn well, you people harass him day and night whenever he's around the ballpark to take a picture. He can barely move 10 feet.
Well, okay, so are you saying that, like, he is beloved at Wrigley, among the denizens at Wrigley, around Wrigley, in the bars, but or are you saying that people are tired of him?
I think it's just people that are being maybe I'm at fault for overreacting to people who are commenting online.
Because I think these online commenters, like, they are racist. These people are trollish, like fat, white, ugly, sexless, middle-aged losers who comment on these on Reddit or on
right.
even Facebook or Twitter or whatever. They're
right.
just trollish a-holes. So
right.
I thought that people do love Ronnie down around Wrigley.
Right. I agree. No, I think the mistake I've made, but just these are Chicago people that I'm interacting with, and mm-hmm. that might be the mistake that I'm making. But I'll read you the comment that I put on Reddit.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And then I got negative 2 points on this comment.
Boo.
Okay, I get the whole, this is me, I get the whole rules are rules, but really, we're going to shake down Ronnie woo-woo. The Ricketts are making bank on everyone that walks into that neighborhood on game day. Give the old man a pass. Hell, when the team is playing like shit, fans can at least get a picture with Ronnie to make their trip worth something. I go to a ton of games, and I live one L stop away from Ronnie. Trust me, I've seen that man taking pictures with people on the way to the ballpark, outside the ballpark, at the ballpark, on the way home from the ballpark. He is a character. Admittedly a dying character, but a character nonetheless. And the Chicago sports landscape has a shortage of characters that represent a time when sports in this town was more grit than Disneyland. I get negative 2 points for that. Now listen to the comment that came after me. Fuck him. There's a reason the bars in Wrigley went from paying for his new dentures, which is not true, to banning him. He is a crackhead scumbag. Plus 3 points.
What? That's ridiculous. I'm
He's
shocked.
He's not banned from the bars. And it was a fan who was a dentist that gave him dentures. Like, the bars didn't
which
pay.
Was,
you know what I mean?
Which,
like,
was that guy was doing.
He just has to be accurate. He just has to be angry and drop an F-bomb.
Yeah, that dentist was doing what Ricketts should be doing, which is riding the publicity.
Yes, exactly. Exactly.
Tom Ricketts, you need to take this meeting with this formerly homeless man. And we know that he's not homeless. Why? Because Jones followed him home one night.
I did. It was that one game that where it was the latest game at Wrigley ever, where it ended like at 1:45 in the morning.
Yeah.
And I was like, this is if he gets off by himself. Because people, you have these guys doing the knockout game on these L stops.
Yeah, and
you know,
speaking of him earlier, the walking man got attacked.
Yeah.
And is the walking man okay? Like, I haven't heard any follow-up.
I saw him a couple months ago.
Oh, okay, good. All right.
A month or two ago. He was at the Walgreens on State and Lake.
And he looked like himself. Yeah. He didn't look like you know.
Growing hair, hanging out. He was good.
Awesome. Yeah, that Yanni look of his, man.
Yeah.
Love it. Like,
that's
Chicago right there.
But at the same point, I want to say the night that I followed Ronnie home, it was the night where the game ended at 1:30 or 1:45 in the morning. Not I left the neighborhood at 1:30, 1:45. The game ended that night.
Yeah, so it was like 2:30.
And he stayed the whole time. Yeah. And it's funny, too. Like, I think it was shortly after the walking man, and I just thought, man, I'll just make sure that this guy gets into his building. I didn't say, Ronnie, I'm following you home. I was just like, I'm going to stay I'm going to stay a few clicks back.
No, just, it wasn't even, dude. You just were being a noble, kind gentleman, because The Walking Man just happened a few months ago, and you followed Ronnie like years ago, like 3, 4, 5 years ago.
Okay, well, whatever. Okay, maybe.
You
maybe,
just were being
But that was
gent.
My sensibility of like, it's really, this isn't like 9:30 at night. This is a different animal, 1:45 in the morning in the city of Chicago.
Right.
I'm going to make sure he gets in.
So this is what we've learned today, dude, is that Jones thinks that Chicagoans need to pull together. We need to come together to stop altercations in road rage incidents. We need to come together to come to each other's aid when cabbies are being maniacs. If there's an elderly gentleman who's by himself on the L, you go one stop further and then you double back to your own place, you know, a few blocks away, just to make sure he gets home safely. Blacks need to start getting along with each other. I think that we've learned a lot today, Jones, although I'm shocked that that you're getting into so many altercations, frankly. I didn't expect that.
I'm fighting to make all this change happen at once.
If our lives are movies, you clearly see yours as an action thriller these days. Like you're like a Bruce Willis type now.
Right.
Avenging.
Yes. This is my movie. I'm the hero of my movie. What do I do in this scene?
That's
how I live my life.
Yeah, well, I mean, on the one hand, I applaud it, but I just, if I was guaranteed to know, or if I knew that the ending was going to be a happy one and wasn't going to end in the hero being killed, I would feel better about it. But I have concerns about you, Jones.
You fear my demise.
Yes, I do.
Okay.
I like it. I like a world where Jones is the vegan, the fit vegan who never gets sick, can come to someone's aid, but not in a I'm going to be here too and fight with you too. You come together. You bring people together. You stop the altercation from happening just by talking it through. That's what I want. I want more dialogue.
You want namaste.
I want more namaste from you and from all of Chicago, but I do hold you up in high esteem, sir.
Well, thank you, Mike.
Great job, Jones.